This week began with a Memorial Day unlike any other. Instead of parades or large gatherings, virtual ceremonies and online name readings helped friends and families recognize those who've fallen while serving their country. Here in Massachusetts, it was also the first day that a number of businesses and services were allowed to reopen, including barbershops, hair salons, plus retail shops are now allowed to offer curbside pickup. But in the nation's capital, the new normal feels a lot like the old, with the House Democrats' latest pandemic stimulus bill being called a liberal wish list and dead on arrival by Republicans in the Senate. Joining us now to talk about all of it is Massachusetts Congresswoman Catherine Clark of the 5th District. Congresswoman, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Oh, it's good to be with you and good to hear your voice.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And to that point, listeners, if you have a question for the Congresswoman, she will take your calls. Whether it's about the state or federal response to the pandemic or something else, you can call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Congresswoman, let's start with how you observed the Memorial Day weekend. What'd you do?
As I have been for the last few months, I spent time with my parents. We pre-recorded a message to our veterans and to Gold Star families. And I went and visited my own parents' grave and spent some time contemplating about them and how much we miss them and how much loss our communities have had to absorb during this very difficult time.
Were there a lot of people there?
There were not. It is a very small cemetery, but it was beautiful. But we sort of feel that loss. I think this Memorial Day was so poignant because we are not only thinking of those who sacrificed everything for us, but the 100,000 lives that we have lost here in the United States, and you know, almost 6,500 fellow Bay Staters have succumbed to this virus. And so loss and grief are all around us. And I think that what has been remarkable about this time is to see communities grappling with the most difficult types of loss, family members, friends, community leaders, and also the loss of jobs and economic security, and how we still continue to come together. And I think that it is extraordinary what people have sacrificed to be at home, to flatten this curve, and support our frontline workers. And so it's, you know, it's really was an unusual Memorial Day to think about all of that as we live through this pandemic.
Another way that it was so unusual, I mean, to put those reflections are so poignant. And at the same time, some areas of the country saw crowds at pools and beaches, and less here, but a lot of places. What do you make of how people have responded to the reopening, which at least here in the Commonwealth has widely coincided with Memorial Day, both here and in across the country?
Yes, you know, I think that it is more difficult to really understand the impact in parts of the country that haven't been hit as hard. And that is why we have such a need at this point for leadership. And unfortunately, the president has decided to remain concerned about his own polling numbers and politicizing the response instead of showing the empathy that we need him to, instead of making a plan for testing and tracing for across the country so we can safely reopen and try to find a new normal. Instead of being a role model, he refuses to wear a mask in public. And so I think that, you know, the leadership starts at the very top. And when we have a president who is telling people that this is somehow a political hoax, and even though he has changed over time with that message, there is an underlying theme that we're not to trust the science, we're not to trust the medical experts, that the only true measure of our security, whether it be healthcare or economic, is how the stock market is doing. And that.
So I don't want to spend too much time on this, Congresswoman, but because you've talked about the messaging around the science, what to say about the fact that Dr. Fauci, Dr. Birx are still or have been front and center and do represent the science?
Well, I think that they do represent the science, but that is not being listened to. We have been told that testing will be available to everyone. That's still not true. We're not even testing at the 1% level that experts say we need to safely reopen this country. Like I said, the president still refuses to wear a mask and is making that really a political dividing point. We should be following the science and exactly what Dr. Fauci is saying and what, you know, other members of his scientific team, but he routinely ignores them and is not putting the policies in place and showing the leadership, acknowledging the loss and putting forward solutions on how we can reopen this economy because we have tackled the health issues. And that's where I see
Congresswoman,
the president falling short.
This is a time when widely we're seeing presidential leadership compared with gubernatorial leadership around the country. What do you make of Governor Baker's handling of the crisis and his approach to phase one of the Commonwealth's reopening?
I appreciate that Governor Baker has been listening to the experts and that he has been putting together a testing, tracing, and isolation program. It is the key to containing this virus and allowing us to get back to what I think will be a new normal, but get back to having businesses open, schools open, and trying to make sense of what's going to be our lives post-pandemic. But there are a lot of questions that still remain. And I know that it's a balance between health security and economic security, but the two go so hand in hand. And I think we need to continue to press Governor Baker to make sure that restaurants know how they will open, how they're going to stay in business. What does it mean when 25% of staff outside of Boston should report to work? Are we going to have enough PPE for people? How will faith leaders have the information they need to open their places of worship safely? And what if there is another surge? So I think that the Baker administration has done a very good job in a very difficult situation, but there are lots of continuing questions. And I think we have to put an emphasis on following the science and being great communicators.
We're talking with Congresswoman Catherine Clark. Let's take a call now, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK if you have a question for the Congresswoman. Andrea is on the line from Newton. Andrea, what's your question?
Hi, I'm asking about filmmakers. I'm the New England local president of Screen Actors Guild, AFTRA, SAG-AFTRA. And we don't know where we are on the phases of opening for Massachusetts. And I'm wondering, are they planning on putting out where the filmmakers fall in the various stages?
Andrea, thank you for that question. And again, that is a perfect example of as we start to reopen, I can tell you that I am hearing very similar questions from many different types of industries, the arts, filmmaking, as well as our local Main Street shops and restaurants on, we need the details. We can make plans, we can adjust employee schedules, we can adjust filming schedules, but we need that kind of detail and help. And that's a great example of where I feel we need to continue working on the national level, but also here in the state to get specific information so that people know where they stand, know what they have to do to be able to financially survive this.
Congresswoman, let's talk about another key industry here in the region, which is childcare. Here in the Commonwealth, it doesn't open until at least June 29th, more than a month after the beginning of phase one reopening. I know that a couple of weeks ago, you were calling for $100 billion for the childcare industry. Connecticut, according to the Boston Globe, was just an official in Connecticut just today said that state stands to lose 45,000 childcare slots if there's not federal intervention. Can you help us put our minds around the size and the scope of that challenge and where you came to $100 billion as the right number to respond to that challenge?
Yeah, as we know, the childcare system has been under invested in for some time, and this pandemic has taken it to its breaking point. And we also know that families were already struggling to pay their bills, and they're wondering who is going to care for their children as we start to reopen. The reality is that reopening without childcare will push especially moms and women further back, and we simply can't allow that. And we have called for a very large number under any circumstances of an investment of $100 billion. But the childcare industry alone throws off $99 billion worth of economic support across the country. And we know that it is losing over $9 billion a month. And we are very afraid that childcare providers that operate on the thinnest margins in the best of times may simply not be able to reopen if they have to care for less children in order to keep everyone safe, if they have to purchase PPE, thermometers, make other adjustments around staffing that are going to make the bottom line very, very difficult for them. So we know that we are seeing chambers of commerce across Massachusetts and the country say this is a huge barrier to reopening. But unfortunately, childcare is often thought of afterwards. And we can't have an economy that's reopening while childcare is still operating under a system that it is banned from opening until after the end of June. So we want to make
sure. As I listen to you, I find myself thinking at the same time. Now, my children are older. They're not in childcare anymore. But at the same time, we know that both parents and childcare workers are so afraid of spread. And that our current home-based care and group care models are high touch, high interaction across children. Is this a time to actually dramatically rethink how childcare happens? As you note, the whole industry was struggling even before this pandemic.
It certainly was. And, you know, part of reopening our economy relies on people having faith that childcare can be provided safely. But it is also, you know, if we are going to make decisions around licensing and ratios that require less children to be served, or maybe we say certain age groups like infants may not be able to have group care at this time safely, then we have to come up with other solutions. It's not enough to say to families, you're on your own. You need to figure this out, even if this crucial support for your family has been taken away. But I agree with you. It is the time that we look at the role of childcare as one of the, you know, underpinnings of our economy and treat it as such, instead of saying it's, you know, an add-on or a nicety, and it's really up to families to figure this out on their own. If we do that, we are simply not going to have the kind of economic rebound that we need. Now is the time.
Congresswoman. I'm sorry, I didn't want to interrupt you there, but we have a limited time. There are two other subjects that I do want to make sure we get a chance to hear from you on. And the first is another bill that you filed today, which calls on the president to appoint a medical supplies response coordinator. It's essentially a supply chain coordinator. What would that role do, and why do you feel it's necessary now?
You know, President Trump has refused to acknowledge the need for adequate medical supplies, putting our workers and patients and the public in danger. And we have seen him shift the blame, leaving states and hospitals often to compete with each other over supplies and ignoring the scientific community. So this is a bill I filed with Rep. Brad Schneider from Illinois to appoint a medical supplies response czar that would serve as that central point of authority and contact for healthcare systems, for supply chain officials, and states. And as we look not only to making sure that we continue to have medical devices like ventilators and PPE, but how are we going to get ready for what we hope will be a vaccine in the next year or so? How are we going to get ready to administer that? It takes somebody who is coordinating this, reporting weekly to Congress, so that we are communicating and putting together a strategy to ensure the healthcare of the American people and therefore ensure their financial and economic health as well.
You talked about sort of pushing the blame or the responsibility to states. Is it possible that the White House simply has a different view of the responsibilities between the federal government and state government here than you? That might be a pushback to the idea that this is an abdication of responsibility. Is it possible it's just a different interpretation of the roles of these different players?
I can't imagine what the president would define his job as if it is not helping people facing a health crisis like this pandemic. If he does not see that in his job description, if he does not see that as a role of the federal government, I'm not sure what role we have. It is that fundamental.
So I do want to shift gears one more time because we're coming up on 2 weeks since the House passed the HEROES Act, which is a $3 trillion stimulus bill, which contains a number of economic relief programs. Republicans declared it dead on arrival. Republican Senator John Kennedy from Louisiana told Fox News that the bill, quote, would rewrite our immigration laws, federalize elections. It would allow federal prisoners to go free. It mentions dope more than it talks about jobs. I think it references cannabis like 68 times. It would expand Obamacare, end quote. What's your response to that?
You know, I have been continued to be discouraged by Mitch McConnell and Republicans in the Senate and the White House and their response to this bill. This bill is about many things, and there are many things in this bill because the American people have such severe needs at this time. But at the core of it is support for state and local government. And what does that mean? That means that at this time, where we've seen state and local revenues just ravaged, is not the time to balance those budgets by cutting our police, our fire, our EMTs, our teachers, our frontline workers. And that states, I can tell you, I've talked to state officials here in Massachusetts and some from other states, and all of my mayors and town managers are saying, we need this help. And this is just not the time to be looking frontline workers and saying, we're going to balance the budget. This is what we need to do through the HEROES Act. It's where it gets its name from. And the Republicans and Mitch McConnell never fail to jump when it comes to corporate bailouts and making sure that the wealthiest Americans have what they say they need. And to hit the pause button on Americans in this time of such pain is just an abdication of their responsibility.
So the bill was 1,800 pages. Could the House pass something much leaner that focuses exclusively on these first responders and the state and local government needs and potentially get a bill passed that the Senate would also approve?
The bill also includes other things that really we have to do. One of them is feeding hungry children. We now have 1 in 5 children in this country going to bed hungry. That is unacceptable. This bill raises up those programs around SNAP and other food supports for families. And it also protects our democracy by asking for money for mail-in programs to protect the vote come November. All of these work together and are essential. We can't take one part and say we're going to support state and local governments, but we're not going to invest in continuing to expand testing and tracing programs. That is, they are so intertwined. And with every bill that we have passed, it has started in one of the House or the Senate. They've drawn up the bills. The last one was written by the Senate Republicans. And then we come together and negotiate. But now is not the time to turn our backs on the needs of families at home. And I think that we will keep the pressure on the Senate to be responsive to their constituents and meet the needs of hardworking Americans.
Congresswoman Catherine Clark of the 5th District, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.